You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
When we started this podcast in 2017, we rolled out the first probably 30 or 40 episodes, and we started getting emails from listeners saying, well, what do I do if I have a pension or I'm expecting some form of regular steady income, you know, after I retire? And then shortly after we started receiving those emails, we actually got another email from a listener who went by the nom de guerre, Grumpus Maximus, and he said, I've been compiling for myself this calculation. All the information that you've done up to this point doesn't really serve someone who has a pension, and I'd love to share with you guys how I'm incorporating my pension into my plan. Well, this is a crowdsourced show, and the idea was that we didn't want our audience to be limited by just the information that we had at our disposal. We could reach out to our community, so we said yes. Grumpus joined us. It was episode 57. This was in January of 2018. And now, 2.5 years later, Grumpus Maximus has become probably one of the most well-known pension explainers on the internet right now. I mean, and he is releasing his brand new book, The Golden Albatross, How to Determine If Your Pension is Worth It. It's a long overdue book, and it's one that's sorely needed. And I can just tell you now, having read it, and as we're preparing for this interview, I'm so glad that Grumpus is the one who wrote it. I'm telling you, you could never have convinced me to read a book about pensions. And if I had read a book about pensions by an academic, it would have been with regret, lots of regret, hours that I could never get back. I don't know how he did it, but Grumpus made this book on pensions, both probably the most financially valuable book that you will ever read, especially if a pension is in your financial plan. But at the same time, one of the most entertaining books in the financial independence space that I've ever read as well. That's a pretty high feat. And I'm excited now to have him back on the show, talk a little bit more about pensions, what the problem is, and what some of the variables people need to consider are, how that played into his own personal life and his own personal decision. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I am doing quite well. And yeah, I mean, part of why we're doing so well is not only is this book fantastic, but this is the next book published by ChooseFI Media. So Grumpus and our team have been working together for the last year to get this published. And it is phenomenal. And to your point, you hear about a book about pensions and you think, wow, this is going to be really dry, but it is anything but. And the reason why is Grumpus made it personal. There are stories. As we've said many times here at ChooseFI, stories are what make the world go round. And he did it. He made something that would otherwise be dry into a fantastic, fantastic story. And he talks about this equation, which is, what is my pension worth versus worth it? Is my pension worth it? Is it worth it to stick around? Because this is a golden albatross. You are stuck there until a certain point. So it's fascinating. And with that, Grumpus, welcome back to ChooseFI.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be back. And thank you for helping get this book out as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think I would try to set the frame for our audience, but I think you'll do it better than I ever could, especially since you kind of wove such a compelling story throughout the book. And I'd like for you to set the frame because, I mean, honestly, Brad and I probably don't have an appreciation for this golden albatross that you described, this inflection point that many individuals reach. And it sounds like in your book, there's a theme that you see with the people that you work with right around year 10. Help our audience understand, you know, what is it about that year 10 that feels like such a knife's edge?
So many pensions cliff vest, and a lot of pensions cliff vest at 20 years. So 10 years is that midway point, and naturally people hit that point and start thinking about whether or not they can do another 10 years or another 15 years, whatever it is, and they find themselves being torn between the idea of having this safety of a pension in retirement on one hand And maybe on the other hand, they have some sort of problem with their job or with the people they work with, or they're getting bored, or there's some kind of major event going on in their life that is making them think about leaving a pensionable job. And it really tears people in two often to have to go through a decision cycle like that.
So Grumpus, just for anybody who hasn't listened to our first episode in episode 57, can you set the stage for your career and when you did reach this point? And if that was this point of, like Jonathan said, this knife's edge, when did you actually start feeling this golden albatross?
So interestingly enough, I started to feel that decision point or the golden albatross at year 16 for me. And that was due to being diagnosed with PTS and then having some major events going on in my life that had me contemplating leaving the military before my pension was due. I didn't know as I was going through, I had a mental breakdown. And as I was going through that issue, I didn't know if I could serve another day in the military, let alone four more years to make it to the 20 point and earn the pension. I eventually worked my way through those issues, some of which I'm still dealing with today, but decided to stay. And what I realized from going through all that trauma was that I'm not the only person who's probably gone through something like this. And the fact that I went through it, and a lot of my journey was a financial journey to try and figure out whether or not I could afford to walk away from a pension that would have been millions of dollars worth of payments after I retired, whether or not, you know, was that good for me? Maybe, you know, somebody else out there was also going through a major event like this and some major emotional trauma or mental trauma to go along with it. A lot of jobs in the pensionable world are military, police, firefighters, first responders, the types of people that often see horrific and tragic things. And maybe they too were going through something like that. So that's was the driving point that helped me start my blog and then kind of wrap those stories that Jonathan and you are talking about into this book.
Yeah, I mean, what you wove into this book is fascinating on multiple levels. First of all, in the book, you're authentic, you're transparent. There's a lot of heartache. There's a lot of, you know, joy. There's humor. I mean, you weave all of these emotions in, and you can imagine the idea that if you could just make it to 20, so for individuals out there, if you could just make it to 20 years, you've got this pension, you've got this floor, this income floor waiting for you. But you have 10 more years to go, and you don't know if you can make it another day. How do you value that? What are the coping strategies that you use? I mean, you work through the mindset and through the material, the financial decisions that are tied to that as well. What's interesting is your book, in many ways, although it does not intend to do this, it also kind of provides a historical look at why we're even having this conversation. I mean, this book, in the corporate world, people that have pensions, these are boomers, maybe Generation X, millennials, they're not really getting pension opportunities in corporate America. There's very few of those remaining. It appears to me that you make the case that when the 401k came about and employers realized they could shift responsibility off their own books onto the individual, they quickly latched onto that. But you still have individuals that were on those old plans that have been grandfathered in that are still, this is being resolved now, which means that we're either talking about, right now, we're talking about boomers in corporate America or Generation X in corporate America, and then we're talking about millennials in these forms of public service. Is that what you find? Does that represent the audience that's intended for this book?
It does, for the most part. As it turns out, prior to the COVID crisis, only about 8% of private sector workers had access to a pension. So it's a much larger number on the public side, you know, in local government, state government, federal government that have access to a pension. And that trend, the trend of switching to a 401k from a pension or a 403b, or if it's public, that's happening both in the public and the private sector. The private sector is far ahead of the public sector in switching. But the public sector is now realizing, hey, these things are really expensive. We can't afford to pay all these promises that we've made, which is really what a pension is. It's a promise that you will be paid from a certain point in your life at retirement onwards until you die. And even then, some pensions might also have built into their offerings, you know, the ability to pass it on to a spouse. So, you know, the bottom line is the private sector in U.S. specifically has been engaged in a 30 to 40-ish year transition away from defined benefit pensions to 401k or some other remuneration for working.
All right, so we're definitely going to dive into that. But before we do that, we'll be right back.
So, Grumbus, you were a 20-year military officer, but like you said, we're talking about this 10-year point, and maybe that wasn't exactly when you went through it, but undoubtedly, you advise other younger military officers who are at that point where, you know, they're at 8, 10, 12 years in, and they're thinking about this, right? Like, as I see it, there's the psychological side, and there's the financial side, and I'd love to hear, like, what would you advise that person? Like, what are the first things they even need to think about before? I assume you have to get in depth with calculations and all this stuff, but like, where does it start? Where does that conversation start?
I think the conversation really starts around the fact that a person is starting to contemplate leaving for whatever reason. You know, I wish I had gone and made the calculations myself at 10 years. In preparation for the eventual point where I might have run into the desire to leave, because for me, it just didn't play out that way. But I'm trying to help them make the calculations prior to going through a major event in their life that has them seriously contemplating leaving this pension on the table and finding work elsewhere in a job that doesn't provide that. So yeah, you know, whether it's the military at 10 years or if, you know, it's a police force at 15, the person that this book was written for is a person who's curious enough to start thinking about whether or not the grass is greener on the other side and whether or not it is worth leaving all that money behind in order to see if the grass is greener on the other side. So anybody who picks this book up before they run into a major either mental or emotional event in their pensionable career is already doing far better than I ever did. Because, you know, the last thing you want to do is to kind of ignore everything until your world comes crashing down around you, having a mental breakdown or something like I did. So my advice to anybody who's starting to think about leaving a pensionable job is to read this book, because I'm going to walk them through everything I had to figure out at, you know, year 16 for me as I was going through this major emotional event. And if my stories can help somebody avoid the drama or the heartache or the pain, the blood, sweat, and tears of all that, then all the better. But, you know, the first step is they have to be thinking for whatever reason that they might not be able to make it however much longer they have in a pensionable career.
Yeah. And as I referenced at the beginning, you know, the way you framed the book, you didn't just go straight to the numbers. You actually went through the mindset and, you know, the right reasons to walk away from a pension from like a motivation perspective and the wrong reasons. I appreciated how you framed that. I think it's going to provide good context for people. I wanted to address something in that we're talking about you evaluating your pension. It's going to be unique to your situation. And the point there being, not all pensions are created equal. And you said this is pretty profound there. A pension is a promise. And unfortunately, some promises, maybe even many promises, are broken. And so when you're making a financial decision about something that's going to happen 5 or 6 or 10 years from now, it's really important that you understand how strong of a promise has been made. And so I'd love for you, in the context of not all pensions are created equal, just to talk through some of the variables that individuals should consider that actually makes one pension better than another.
So through my research, I've come up with 5 to 6 important provisions that a pension provides that makes some worth more than others. Some of those factors are how quickly the pension pays out after retirement, whether or not there's a cost of living allowance or adjustment that's made based on inflation each year, whether or not there's something like health care attached to the pension post-retirement. So yeah, the book lays out like, hey, you know, there are these kind of categories of things that pensions that are more worth more value, and you can use the calculations in the book to figure out that value. Objectively, there are pensions that are more worth more to stay for, and there are pensions that are less worth it to stay for. So a great example would be the Illinois pension system in that state is funded roughly around 30 to 40% at the moment for all the future pension obligations that they made. So, you know, someone in Illinois who's part of a job that pays into that pension system, that pension's objectively speaking is going to be worth a lot less because the likelihood that the future promise that the pension pays out, it's far more likely that that promise is going to be broken as opposed to some other state that's got a pension that's 100% funded or even more. And in the private sector, the same thing plays out. Like some companies, you know, owe billions and billions of dollars into their pensions. GE would be a good example of this recently. And they struggle to find the money oftentimes, especially when you have something like the great financial crash of 2008, 2009, or something, you know, more recent like the COVID event.
So Grumpus, what would be the gold standard? Is it anything by the federal government? I'm assuming military pensions like yours. Can you talk us through like just a couple right off the top of your head of what would be considered more on the spectrum here of safer pensions?
So the best gauge of safety is the trend in the funding levels. So if a pension is trending upwards, there are hard calculations that have to be made each year, you know, by actuaries and things like that, that determine how much either a company or a state or whatever has to pay into a pension system. And the most important thing is how well funded that pension is over time against future obligations. So the American Association of Actuaries has written in the past that the trend is far more important than any snapshot in time. So, you know, let's say last year it was funded at 85%, but this year it's funded at 90%. That trend over time of where the pension is versus their future obligations is basically the most important thing. And it would be the same way if the trend was going down from like, you know, 80% to 75%. So that is the bottom line, most important thing. There are many other factors that I write about in the book that helps a person determine how valuable their pension is.
Yeah, and I know that two big ones you mentioned in the book was the cost of living adjustment, or COLA, not to be confused with Pepsi, and whether or not there's a healthcare rider or a healthcare subsidy baked into the pension. And one thing that I thought was really interesting that I think would be kind of fun for our audience as well is the premise that I understood that you set up was when a pension does not include a cost of living adjustment, then your purchasing power over time is being eroded. So let's say your pension was $50,000, 20 or 30 years from now, that $50,000 is being eroded. Maybe it's, you know, 40 or 30,000, something along those lines. I know you did the fun exercise with Big Earn where someone's saying, well, okay, yeah, my pension does not have a cost of living adjustment. What would it look like for me to build my own DIY cost of living adjustment? And I'm just curious if you could explain for our audience. So an individual doesn't have, their pension is not inflation adjusted after doing the research. What did you and Earn come up with for a way to create your own, to basically act as a subsidy for that?
So that was a fairly fun event. One of my readers had written in and asked me, and then I teamed up with Earn because I'm not a polymath. But basically, what we figured out, Earn and I, is that a person who wanted to build a COLA could employ something of their own COLA, could employ something like the 4% rule or rule of thumb with a specific amount of cash invested from day one of their retirement. So if you're looking at your pension and you see it doesn't have a cost of living allowance, that means it's subject to inflation's eroding effect over time for purchasing power. You can save up a certain amount of cash, invest it 80-20 between stocks and bonds, and then employ a withdrawal rate, a safe withdrawal rate, essentially, or actually, if you want to spend to zero, you don't even have to employ a safe withdrawal rate. You could just employ a withdrawal rate in order to pay yourself the additional amount that a COLA would have paid if your pension had a COLA. But yeah, so, you know, the effect of inflation is probably one of the second most important things in determining the worth of a pension or the value of a pension, because the COLA, you know, defeats inflation. In the book, I say, hey, the same amount of money stays in your pocket over time, right? So if you got to pay for something and it's increased in price, you're able to pay that increase in price yearly, as opposed to if you don't have a COLA attached to your pension, you know, you can't buy the same amount of each year over time.
So since we're talking about the 4% rule of thumb and saving additional money and such, and I'm curious about the intersection with financial independence. In the book, you said FI was the answer, quote, to all your problems. And I'm curious, like, we have so many people who write us questions of, oh, I have a pension. I don't know how to calculate my FI number. And I think we did talk about this briefly in our first episode. But for people who didn't listen to that, can you talk about, for you, the intersection of FI and how that did change your world? And then actually for other people, like how they think about this in terms of numbers?
Yeah, I can. So with a pension, you obviously, one of you already mentioned it, you have a floor of income coming in each year, right? So you know you're not going to fall below a certain level of income. It allows them to think about retirement in a different way. So for me, as I was going through all these emotional issues, PTS, that major life event, I heard Jim Collins interviewed in a podcast. It was around the release of his book, you know, went and read the book, and I discovered FI, the 4% rule, all that stuff. But I quickly realized that with a pension, like, you're cutting into the amount of cash that you need to build in a major way, because it provides an annual amount of money that's going to come in and allow you to live at a certain level. So if you know how much you need in retirement, if you have a good enough understanding of what your spending is going to be annually in retirement, then you have a lot less that you need to save to make up the difference between what the pension would bring in and what you would need to spend each year to live whatever kind of lifestyle you want to live in retirement. So, you know, the reason why that was so powerful for me was I didn't know what I was going to do next after the military. There I was at year 16. I was melting down in many fronts mentally. And like I said, I didn't know if I could go another day, let alone four more years to earn that pension. But part of the findings that helped me through that major emotional event was the fact that, oh, hey, my wife and I, we've saved a lot of money already. We were never big spenders. That said, we were never all that great at investing, but we had a large pot of money built up. So for us, or for me specifically, it wasn't going to be that hard to save up the extra money needed to retire from the military and never have to work a real job again if I didn't want to, and nor would my wife. And so that assurance, due to the fact that so much money was going to come in from the pension, that assurance alone helped me solve some of my mental issues, a lot of which were anxiety-ridden issues about what am I going to do in the future? You know, what's going to be my next part of life? Like, what's the next chapter of the story going to be? Well, I realized it didn't have to be going back to work full time. And I guess the real kicker was our quality of life wasn't going to suffer by retiring because I had that pension money coming in, and therefore we didn't need to save as much and employ, you know, the 4% rule for a larger amount of cash if we didn't have the pension.
So as a service member in the military and who's done 20 years, do you find that most individuals in the military believe they are going to have to get another job even if they actually serve their full 20? Is that conception pretty common?
Yes, it is. Or at least, you know, for the people that I met throughout the military, there's always people getting out and double dipping by going back to maybe like a federal job that's not in the military and earning a second pension. But yeah, generally speaking, anyone who thinks that they're going to get out, you know, roughly around 20 to 25 years, they're more than likely thinking that they're going to have to go and get another job. Now, maybe that job isn't as stressful, isn't as full-time as a military job is, but yeah, they're still going to go back and get one. So that was the real discovery for me, was like, I could skip all that, you know, just by assuring or ensuring we had enough money for retirement, right? So again, my wife and I had always been good savers. Once we realized, hey, save and invest, specifically for this plan. For me, the anxiety of what I was going to have to go and do next completely went away. And if you can see me waving my hands right now as I'm talking, you know, I'm making the fairy dust things, happy fingers floating away. But yeah, so it's not just about the pension. You have to be on this journey of financial self-education, which I fortunately just had been on already in the previous few years prior to being diagnosed with PTS. For whatever reason, I had started this financial education for myself. It was the reason why I was listening to the Mad Scientist podcast that interviewed Jim Collins and kind of set the chain of events into motion for me figuring out how powerful a pension could be in addition to employing a safe withdrawal rate. But yeah, that's a long way of me unfortunately saying that, yes, you know, most people in the military think, you know, whenever they retire, they're going to have to go and get a second job, and many do. But I found the fact that you don't have to do it far more powerful than the idea of going and trying to find some other work.
In your experience with friends and colleagues in the military, let's say, have you found that, like, once you bring this concept of financial independence to them, that they see it and, like, it's almost like a sea change? I know it sounds like this happened to you. I know it happened to me personally. Like, I was a saver, but I never understood. There was a point where, okay, you don't need to work anymore. You don't need to work until you're 65 or, you know, whatever it may be, 20, 30 years in the military, right? Like, do they see that? Like, is it clear, or do you have to do some convincing to undo all those years of either not understanding that or outwardly thinking the opposite?
That's a great question, because at my last command prior to retirement, when I first got there, you know, I sent out several emails kind of to the command saying, hey, here's just some thoughts on saving and investing and retirement, right? Because we have access to this pension. If you're going to stick around, hey, you might as well maximize it. So I quickly developed a reputation in my last command for being kind of the person that people wanted to talk to about finances and stuff like that. But I found that, you know, it wasn't a large room of people. It was onesies, twosies kind of knocking on my door saying, hey, remember that email you sent out? I'd kind of like to sit down and talk more. So for me, it wasn't about going out there and preaching the word, so to speak. It was me realizing, like, this has really got – the person has to be ready to kind of receive this information and kind of apply it to their life. So, you know, it wasn't a rush of people, but there were definitely a steady flow of, you know, small amounts of people continually kind of asking me. And as soon as the word got out that I was retiring and moving to New Zealand and stuff like that, interest kind of perked up, ears kind of perked up and said, oh, hey, like, how are you doing that? And why are you going to be able to do the things that you're talking about? So, you know, I use that as kind of a hook to reel people in as well to this idea of FI. But yeah, you know, in my opinion, unless the person is ready to receive the information and internalize it and then apply action, going out there and kind of preaching the word, it's going to fall on deaf ears. But, you know, there's always that one or two people in the military who are ready to listen. And the thing that makes the military pension so powerful is it starts immediately after retirement. You know, that is one of the categories I mentioned earlier of what makes a pension more valuable than less.
Ah, you've set me up perfectly, Grumpus. What are these variables?
Yeah, so recalling from memory, there are five variables I would look at that makes your pension objectively worth more than others. So one is the pension starts immediately. The further delayed your start of your pension occurs in retirement, into retirement, the less valuable it is, both from a monetary value as well as, like, what's it going to do for your overall safe withdrawal rate. The fact that your pension has a COLA makes it more valuable than others. So we already talked about it. Inflation eats away at your purchasing power each year if you don't have a COLA. Whether or not your pension has health care attached to it is also extremely important, but only really in the U.S. You know, around the world where they have national health care systems, you know, whether or not there's health care attached to a pension or not is neither here nor there for a lot of people. The fourth is, so pensions are calculated using a formula, and each pension system has their own formula that they use to determine how much a person's going to get paid annually once they retire, once they hit the payment point. So if a pension uses a high value calculation for the number of years you were in the system and therefore how much they're going to pay out, that is worth more than others. Like some pensions literally just, you know, they're worth more because they use a higher multiple than others. So that's four. And the fifth one I place a lot of weight in is total dollar value. Some pensions just pay out more than others.
And everyone listening to this, like this book needed to be written. This is a niche audience. You know, not everyone listening to this has a pension, but you probably know someone that does. This book will help them. This book was written for them, and it's one that will, it's probably one of the best gifts that you could give to somebody who is grappling with this inflection point. You know who these individuals are. This book is the best resource that I've seen for this, which is why we wanted to help Grumpus get it out into the universe. We talked about these five variables right now. And what we're talking about here is a way to quantify something that seems kind of scary and unknown. Grumpus did a great job with this in the book, kind of walking you through the calculations. And he helps you kind of do this on your own. But what we've asked him to do is, would he be willing to do a live webinar with our audience? So if you have a pension, or you know, or you're listening to this, you have questions, you've been taking notes, and you want to be a part of that to ask him this scenario or watch him go through these calculations live, that webinar is going to be announced. It's going to be released later on this month. If you want to register to be a part of that, you can register for the event at choosefi.com/live. You will get a copy of the Excel sheet that Grumpus uses to make these calculations, and you'll be able to apply that to your own pension situation. So highly valuable. And again, you can find more information to register for that at choosefi.com/live.
Grumpus, I'm thinking in terms of the actual calculation. And while I think a lot of people think about their pension and say, oh, this is a $1 million decision, or this maybe even more than that if you have healthcare and other things involved. But is there any calculator that makes it like, all right, this pension is worth this much on my yearly salary? Because I think that's something that somebody could actually understand and apply, like an apples to apples comparison. Because in your book, you talk about gutting it out the last few years, which is what you did. You, in an ideal world, would not have worked those last couple of years in the military. But at that point, you're 17 years in and you gutted it out. But you talked about in depth in the book, the opposite of gutting it out. And I think for people, like seeing that apples to apples of, okay, this $1 million for the next 50 years, that's a big dollar figure, but it's actually $10,000 on my annual salary, or $15,000 or something. And then they could make, you know, an educated decision of moving out of that job potentially and not feel like they're making this absurd decision for their financial future. Like, have you ever seen anything like that? Or have you ever thought about maybe creating that or having Big Earn created or some such?
So yeah, I have seen things like that. The very first place a person who has access to a pension in retirement should go is to their pension plan's website, because hopefully, if it's a well-run pension, they'll have a calculator built in with the formula that would determine how much you're going to make annually in retirement from the pension. And if I've learned anything from studying pensions, it's that once you study one pension, you've only studied one pension. Every single pension system is a little bit different. So that's why I recommend head to the webpage or pull out the annual statement that might provide what the pension formula is. If you have a well-run pension, though, more often than not, they're going to have some sort of built-in calculator on their website. There are two other websites that I mentioned in the book that allow you, if you hack it, and I kind of walk the reader through the steps that are needed to hack the calculators. But there are two other websites that you can find a method for calculating how much your pension is going to be worth in retirement on an annual basis as you set up and examine your retirement spend plan.
So Grumpus, I think the next phase here is to talk about what the last 2.5 years have looked like for you. You know, when we talked to you 2.5 years ago, you are in the process of calculating this and making the decision to gut it out or not. And now we have the opportunity to talk with you 2.5 years later and kind of look at, you know, you reach financial independence, you've hit your numbers, like kind of catch us up. What's happened in your personal life and your financial life over the last 2.5 years?
Yeah, so some major changes happened. One is that I decided to retire a year earlier than my original plan when I talked to you guys last time. There were some events, again, kind of connected to my my mental health issues, as well as I started having some physical health issues that made me contemplate leaving at 20 instead of 21. And the reason why I was hanging around till 21 is that in the military, we have access to the GI Bill, and you can transfer that over to your either your kids or your wife or your spouse, which I wanted to do. But the commitment is you have to stay in 4 more years from the time you sign it over. If you don't stay in that length, then it just reverts back to you. But I decided, or I went and made the calculations. I didn't just decide. I went and made the calculations that I didn't really need to transfer the GI Bill over to either my wife or my kids in order for us to reach financial independence. We had other ways we could pay for our kids' universities if and when they decide to go. So I didn't need to hang around that extra year. And so we decided I wouldn't. My wife and I, we made the decision that, you know, it's for the best for me, especially for my mental health, but for some of my physical health problems as well. I'd just retire at 20. I'd hit the 20-year point, make sure I was good, there weren't going to be any hiccups, and then retire. So that's what I did. But in conjunction with that, retirement was a big shift in our retirement plan about where we were going to live after I retired from the military. And we decided we wanted to move to New Zealand. I don't know if you guys remember, but I was stationed in Hawaii for my last tour. And one of the reasons why I took that job there in Hawaii was so my wife and I could knock New Zealand off the bucket list of places to visit. During our first visit, we had such a good time and met so many great people that I started, my wife turned to me at some point. She's like, "Hey, can we retire here instead?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I'll have to go and look at the numbers." And the numbers, especially for Hawaii, but even California, San Diego is the other place where we wanted to go back to. The numbers were fairly comparable to San Diego and a lot cheaper than Hawaii. And we got all the benefits of being in an awesome country with these great outdoor activities to do, lots of friendly people, all that. So again, I went and made the calculations and determined, yeah, we can do it. And then it just became an issue of finding a visa entry path into New Zealand. It's not necessarily straightforward. Like many countries around the world, you know, they don't just want anybody coming into their country and setting up camp. They want to make sure, you know, you can provide some value to them. Most often it is to work. But, you know, my retirement plan was not to go back to work. So we found a different way and decided to use the GI Bill specifically for me and do another master's. And we found the city we wanted to live in New Zealand by taking a second trip, specifically scouting out sites where we wanted to live. I found a local university that offered a master's program that I was qualified to apply for. I applied for it, got accepted. I applied for the GI Bill to pay for it, got accepted. And then held the retirement ceremony of October 2019, waited until I got my retirement ID January of 2020, and then we moved the family. And that was a huge life event. We're actually still going through the tail end of that because the coronavirus delayed our household goods from arriving. So they just arrived last week. But even despite the coronavirus lockdown, we don't regret our decision at all. It's been great so far, and we are looking forward to hopefully many years of being able to stay here and, you know, enjoy the lifestyle as well as contribute to the country kind of getting back on its feet after COVID.
Grumpus, thank you so much for joining us on the show. To everybody listening to this, go pick up a copy of this book for yourself if you have a pension or for someone you know that's dealing with this inflection point. To get a copy of this book, you can go anywhere books are found, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. You can find a copy on our website. Go to choosefi.com/pension or on any page on our website, you'll see at the top of the page where it says our books, you'll be able to find a copy there as well. And then I will just say this, order your copy of your book, read it. Take notes, write down questions, and join us for the live webinar where you can watch Grumpus apply this method to a live case study. I think it'll be an incredibly valuable use of your time. And Grumpus, again, thank you so much for joining us on the show today and putting this book together for the community.
You're welcome, Jonathan. And I wanted to thank you and Brad as well for taking the chance to publish this book. We wouldn't be getting out the word to as many people and helping them if it wasn't for you two.
It is our real pleasure, man. So, all right, well, enjoy New Zealand. I know it's like 4 a.m. where you are right now. So I hope you got that cup
hello
of coffee.
From the future. Goodbye from the future.
I was just watching Back to the Future too, man. If you could give me some tips, you know, like who says you can't time the market when you got friends in New Zealand? We got this covered.
Yeah, that's right.
All right,
one
man.
Whole day in advance.
There you go.
All right. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks again, buddy. All right, everyone. I hope you got value from today's episode. Share it with a friend, a family member. There are lots of individuals out there that are grappling with this financial decision, and it really does have ramifications. It's important to have this information on the front end, really before you need it. If you have not yet done so, please press subscribe on your podcast player of choice. Just lets the platform know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. You're listening to this on a podcast player, or maybe you're listening to it on our website. We're available on all podcast players, including iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Dogcatcher, Google Podcast. Your podcast player of choice will have it. Stay tuned, stay subscribed. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.